So apparently scientists have discovered the earthquake at the crucifixion. That's at least what the Daily Mail is reporting. And if you've been on X for more than 2 seconds this week, you've probably seen it yourself. People dunking, people celebrating, people claiming science just proved the Bible. And look, if this is true, that is actually wild, because Matthew doesn't just say there was an earthquake. He also talks about the earth shaking, rock splitting, tombs opening. It's one of the most dramatic details in the entire Passion narrative. So here's what we're going to do in this video. Okay, we're going to read what Matthew actually claims, not what we think he claims, not what Twitter thinks he claims. Then we're going to go straight to the actual original peer review study that all the hype is sort of pointing to, because a lot of people are talking about this research, but they haven't read the study themselves. I'm going to tell you exactly what it does and does not show. So let's go ahead and start with Matthew. All right, before we get to Matthew, elephant in the room, the background looks a lot different. The renovations on the new studio are almost complete. We just need to add some books on the bookshelves, maybe a little bit more lighting to spice it up. But yes, very, very happy with how it turned out. So thanks to every one of you that donated and helped make this new studio a reality. Now, having said all that, we still do need your support. So if you'd like to see Capturing Christianity continue to grow and prosper and develop into this amazing ministry where we're exposing the intellectual side of Christian belief through in-person interviews, debates, and these videos that we produce, head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/capturingchristianity. I'm asking people to donate $10 a month, become a $10 patron to help support, keep this ministry going. All right, let's dive in to Matthew. All right, here is Matthew's Gospel, chapter 27, starting in verse 45. Now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani? That is, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of the bystanders, hearing it, said, this man is calling Elijah. And one of them at once ran and took a sponge, filled it with sour wine, and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. But the others said, wait, let us see whether Elijah will come and save him. And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook, and the rocks were split. The tombs were also opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many. When the centurion and those who were with him, keeping watch over Jesus, saw the earthquake and what took place, they were filled with awe and said, truly, this is the Son of God. Okay, so pretty obviously, this is one of the most intense passages in the entire New Testament. So let's slow down and make a few very simple observations about it without explaining anything away and without trying to harmonize it with geology yet. First, Matthew clearly ties the earthquake to the moment of Jesus's death. This isn't background scenery. This isn't a throwaway line. The timing matters in the narrative. Jesus dies, and then the earth literally shakes. Second, this is not a throwaway line. Okay, Matthew describes this as a dramatic, even cosmic event. The ground is shaking, rocks are splitting, tombs are literally opening. Whether you take that language as literal or as symbolic or apocalyptic or some combination, it's meant to signal that something world-changing just happened. This is Matthew waving a giant theological flag saying history just completely pivoted. Third, and this is really important, so hear me carefully. Okay, Christians, Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, or Coptic Orthodox, we're not required as a matter of faith or salvation to believe that Matthew is giving a blow-by-blow geological report. Okay, this isn't in the Nicene Creed. This isn't a condition of orthodoxy. You can affirm the resurrection, the divinity of Christ, the entire Christian faith, and still have questions about how to interpret Matthew's passion narrative. That really matters because it lets us ask historical and scientific questions without sort of panicking. Now, with that said, Matthew seems to anchor this in real history. Okay, this isn't like a once upon a time kind of story. This happens under Pontius Pilate in Judea at a specific moment in the first century. And if your problem is like with the people and the coming out of the tombs and stuff, you're just not very familiar with the way that miracles work in the world. We have so much evidence for miracles. That's another story though. So if Matthew is describing a real seismic event, even if it's described with like theological and symbolic language, then we're talking about an earthquake in Judea somewhere around 30 to 33 AD. And that's why people are excited about this, because if science actually found evidence of an earthquake in that window, then suddenly this passage doesn't just feel dramatic, it feels situated in history. So the question becomes very obvious for us. Did science actually find anything there that verifies this story? That's where the study comes in. All right, now let's turn to the study. As I mentioned, a lot of people haven't even read this, so this is going to be news for a lot of people. First important thing to know about this study is that it is not new research. Okay, this paper was published in 2011 in a peer-reviewed journal called the International Geology Review, which is a legitimate, well-respected geology journal. The lead author is Jefferson B. Williams, with co-authors Marcus Schwab and A. Kim Brower, affiliated with the German Research Center for Geosciences. So this isn't fringe science, but it also isn't or shouldn't be breaking news. What's happening right now in the online world is that a mainstream outlet, the Daily Mail, picked up an old paper, repackaged it with a dramatic headline, and Twitter did what Twitter does. Now, having said that, what are the authors in this paper actually doing in this study? They're not actually trying to prove the Bible. They're asking a very specific geological question. Is there evidence in the Dead Sea sediment record for an earthquake sometime in the early first century? So step one, why the Dead Sea matters. The Dead Sea is geologically special. Okay, it sits on a major fault line, the Dead Sea Transform Fault, and it has something called varved sediments. That might sound sort of technical and jargony, but it's actually very simple. A varv is just an annual sediment layer. Think of it like tree rings, but sort of underwater. Every year, one layer forms in the winter from flood debris, another forms in the summer from mineral deposits. So 1 year is basically one pair of layers. So if nothing disturbs them, you can literally count years. All right, step two is what earthquakes do to those layers. When a strong earthquake hits, those neat layers get distorted. They break, they fold, they mix together into what geologists call a seismite, basically a fossilized earthquake signature. Now, the Dead Sea is actually especially good at preserving these seismites because it's a closed lake. Sedimentation is always steady over there, and earthquakes leave very clear deformation patterns. The authors rely on decades of prior work showing that these disturbed layers reliably correlate with known historical earthquakes. Step three, there's a key anchor point in history, 31 BC. Okay, this is their sort of crucial move in the paper. There is a massive, well-documented earthquake in 31 BC, roughly 60 years before Jesus resurrected. It's mentioned by Josephus, shows up all over in the Dead Sea Basin, and it leaves a very thick, unmistakable deformation layer. The authors use that earthquake as a chronological anchor. Okay, very important. Once they identify the 31 BC quake in the sediment core, they simply count upward year by year through the varves. Step four, what they find. Now, when they do that, when they count upwards, they encounter another disturbed layer higher up in the core. Based on varve counting alone, they tentatively date the second earthquake to around 31 AD. And this is where people start getting sloppy. The authors are extremely clear that this date comes with an uncertainty of plus or minus 5 years. So we're not talking about a laser precise timestamp. We're talking about a date range, a 10-year date range. That gives us a window of roughly 26 to 36 AD. And yes, this does obviously overlap with Pontius Pilate's governorship, the historically plausible window for the crucifixion. The overlap is obviously real, but it's an overlap, not a specific identification. Step five is what the authors explicitly say about this. And this is the part that most headlines are conveniently leaving out. Okay, the authors repeatedly stress that this is an estimate. Varve counting is not perfect. More than one interpretation is possible. They do not claim that they've proven Matthew correct. They say the geological data is consistent with an early first century earthquake. And that's about it. Okay, so to summarize just the science, no theology yet. A, there is strong evidence for an earthquake in the Dead Sea region. B, it likely occurred sometime between 26 and 36 AD. C, the dating method is careful but imprecise. And then D, the authors themselves treat the conclusion as very tentative. In a nutshell, that is the study. Okay, there's barely any hype. No science, just proved Christianity stuff. Just very careful geology. Now, the real question, and probably the question why you're here, the one that everyone wants answered, is does this earthquake have anything to do with Matthew's gospel? That's where interpretation begins and where we need to slow down once again. So backing up, we've already read Matthew, we read the science. So the obvious question at this point is, did scientists just discover the earthquake at the crucifixion? And the honest answer here is maybe, but not in the way that the headlines are suggesting. Okay, here's what the data actually gives us. And this is the line I want you to remember here. What the data actually gives us is an earthquake in the right window. What it does not give us is a name tag that says this occurred during the crucifixion. That distinction matters. Okay, let's lay out three live possibilities that the researchers themselves offer in their paper. Possibility number one, this is the earthquake Matthew describes. On this view, Matthew is reporting a real seismic event that happened at the time of Jesus' death, and that event left a physical trace in the Dead Sea sediments. Geologically speaking, that's not crazy. The date range fits. The region was seismically active. We know that. And the kind of shaking required to deform those sediments is well within what we'd expect from a moderate local quake. If that's what happened, then this study would represent a rare and fascinating point of contact between texts and terrain, between ancient narrative and physical evidence. But, and this is important, the study itself does not claim this, which brings us to the second option. Possibility number two, this was a different local earthquake in the same decade. Again, we're talking about a range of 10 years here. In other words, there was really an earthquake sometime between 26 and 36 AD, but it had nothing to do with the crucifixion. Now, this is actually a very conservative reading of the data. The Dead Sea region experiences earthquakes with some regularity, and not every quake gets recorded in surviving historical sources. And not every quake was strong enough in Jerusalem to attract widespread attention. So this scenario says Matthew reports one earthquake, geology detects a different one. The overlap in timing is interesting, but completely coincidental. And this is totally possible given this data, okay, which leads to the third option, the one that skeptics usually prefer. Possibility number three, Matthew incorporated known seismic activity into his narrative. On this view, Matthew wasn't describing a specific historical quake at all. Instead, he used earthquake imagery, possibly inspired by real seismic events people knew about at the time, to make a theological point. It's not super unusual in ancient literature. Earthquakes often function symbolically. Divine judgment, cosmic upheaval, God acting in history. And remember what we said earlier, okay? Christians are not required as a matter of faith or salvation to read Matthew 27 as a literal seismographic report. So that option is sort of maybe a little bit on the table too, but now notice something important about this, okay? The geological data itself does not decide between these three possibilities. It cannot do that. Geology can tell us that an earthquake happened, but it can only tell us roughly when it happened. It cannot tell us exactly when or why or where exactly or how it was interpreted by ancient authors. So anyone saying science has confirmed Matthew is for sure overstating the case. Okay, but, and this matters just as much, anyone saying this disproves Matthew is also overstating the case. All the data really gives us is this: an earthquake happened in the right general time frame, in the right general region. Now, what you do with that depends on how you integrate history, literature, and theology. And that brings us to the bigger picture, why this actually matters, even if it's not decisive evidence for Christianity. So where does that leave us? Well, first, let's be very clear about what this doesn't do. This study does not prove Christianity, okay? It does not force a particular reading of Matthew, and it does not mean geology has suddenly caught up with the gospel. If you're a skeptic, you're not obligated to change your worldview because of this paper. But now let's talk about, and this is exciting, what it does do. What does this paper actually do for Christianity? It shows that an earthquake in Judea during the early first century is geologically plausible. It shows the region really was seismically active at exactly the time the Gospels placed Jesus' death. And it quietly undercuts the claim sometimes made by some people that Matthew's account describes something that couldn't have happened. In other words, this doesn't move us from Christianity is false to Christianity is true, but it does move the conversation from that's obviously mythological nonsense to, okay, well, that's at least historically possible. And that shift actually does matter more than people realize, because historical claims are almost never established by one knockout piece of evidence. They're evaluated cumulatively. You look at multiple independent sources, historical context, plausibility constraints, and whether the pieces fit together without strain. This study doesn't carry all of the weight, but it slots into a broader historical framework in a way that's pretty interesting. And that's the right word for it. Interesting, not decisive, which is why the breathless headlines are misleading in both directions. Okay, this isn't science proves the Bible, but it's also not another debunked Christian fairy tale. It's a reminder that the New Testament is making claims in real places at real times in a part of the world that we can actually study. And sometimes, just sometimes, the ground itself leaves a trace. The bottom line here is this, okay, this study is way more careful than people on the internet realize, especially Christians on X. This is a responsible paper, it's genuinely fascinating, and it's a great example of why neither hype nor cynicism is a good guide to truth. Because the most interesting historical questions we can ask about Christianity are probably going to live somewhere in the space between. Oh, and by the way, Christianity is true.